In many of the workshops that I will do, I will have them join in with me and actually present with me so that they can say within the context of the institution, gee, this is how this works, and or they follow the workshop with a specific hands-on one. And I think this is very much peer-driven. You know, the outsider can open the door, but people only step in when they see that they can do it or their peers have done it. And I find that to be an effective way to sort of stay on top of things.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to Digital to Learn. I'm here with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder. And Tiffany, before you say anything, I want to let our listeners know that you have been selected as one of the top two co-hosts on the show. Congratulations.
Well, I'm most concerned, I think, with which order. So can you reveal
that? I'm not able to reveal that now.
Okay. I'll find a way to learn the results.
And we're here with our amazing guest today, who I would dub as one of the busiest people in higher education. Peggy Mackey is a higher education consultant specializing in assisting undergraduate and graduate colleges and universities, higher education boards, higher education organizations, and disciplinary organizations integrate the assessment of student learning into educational practices, processes, and structures. She serves as assessment field editor at Stylus Publishing and has served on the National Advisory Board for AACNU's Value Project and its Quality Assurance Group. For 3 years, she was sole consultant to the Rhode Island Board of Governors for Higher Education and its public higher education institutions under a multi-year assessment project. From May 2011 to May 2013, under a grant from the Davis Education Foundation, awarded to the Massachusetts Department of Higher Education, she served as the sole consultant to the 28 public colleges and universities in Massachusetts to assist them in building their assessment capacity to score students' authentic work using the value rubrics. In January 2015, she was appointed by the Lumina Foundation to serve on its National Advisory Board overseeing systemic change in higher education through the degree qualifications profile and tuning. Altogether, she has presented over 615 workshops and keynotes in the U.S. and abroad. At the request of Inside Higher Education, EDUCAUSE, and Project Kaleidoscope, she has presented national webinars on the assessment of student learning. She is also the recipient of a national teaching award, the Lindbeck Award for Distinguished Teaching. She currently serves on the National Institute of Learning Outcomes Assessments Advisory Panel. Her publications include, among others, Assessing for Learning, Coming to Terms with Assessment, The Assessment of Doctoral Education, Assessment That Works, A National Call, Real-Time Student Assessment, and Transforming Digital Learning and Assessment. Welcome, Peggy.
Well, thanks for the invitation to spend time with you.
We're glad to have you here. One of the things we'd like to start with on the show, and these are going to be done in kind of rapid-fire version, we're going to give you some this or that questions to find out a little bit more about you outside of higher ed. So here we go. First one, ice cream, cone or dish?
Oh, I have to say cone, principally because I have two Newfoundlands and they sit and wait for me to share the tip.
That's wonderful. The newest and latest phone or a new laptop?
So that's my MacBook Air M1 2020.
Good for you. Eggs or bagels?
Oh, we have a Russian bagel shop around the corner.
Ah, very good.
Rock and roll or hip-hop?
Oh, rock and roll.
Okay. Vacation or staycation?
Because I live on an island in the Atlantic in Gloucester, Massachusetts, I have to say staycation. Why travel?
So for someone who lives in a scenic location like that, a tourist stop, where do you go on vacation?
Actually, my parents have a place in Canada, and we often go there, but it's a pretty long haul from here. And there's just so beautiful to live and have the opportunity to be on the ocean that we actually rarely do travel.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful.
Roller coasters or bumper cars?
I'd have to say I would feel safer in a roller coaster and to avoid somebody hitting me from the rear.
Super sandwich.
I have to have both together.
Oh, good choice. Good choice.
Dark chocolate or white chocolate?
So I know it's not as healthy. I have to say only milk chocolate.
Any chocolate's good. That's really an unfair question. Mm-hmm. Notebooks or loose paper?
You know, I wish I could say I am more organized in a notebook, but I am a loose paper girl. I have pieces of paper all over the house in which I need to write down whatever I'm thinking at the moment. You know, it's on the nightstand, on the kitchen drawer, on the refrigerator. And my husband will say, do you need this piece of paper? And I say, oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or loose napkin. Do you still need this napkin that I've tried throwing away five times?
Have you found yourself making any kind of transition away from note-taking on paper as opposed to a tablet or on your phone or some other digital device?
Yeah, I've really become much better at that now, that I'll open my notes online and add things rather than always searching for those pieces of papers. I mean, that's been a wonderful move for me.
Good.
Our last question for this section is gloves or mittens?
I have to wear mittens here. It gets very cold and they keep your fingers warmer.
Is there any trouble getting on and off the island, for example, in the wintertime?
Basically not. I mean, we only have one major bridge. That would be a problem if something happened on it. And there periodically have been times when they have to reconstruct portions of it. But by and large, where it really is stressed is by the tourists from May through October. They just line right up across that bridge.
How long is the bridge?
It's about 2 miles.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That is a bridge.
Yeah.
Now we're going to get to the questions that we really called to have you here for. These are the serious questions. We came to know Peggy through her most recent book with Peter Shea, Transforming Digital Learning and Assessment, which all of our listeners absolutely have to read. I am totally enthralled with this book, the ideas that are shared. And there's also a foreword to the book by one of our former guests and one of our favorite guests, woo-hoo, Brian Alexander.
Oh, he's a hero.
He is. He is indeed. I can't believe how much he thinks and writes. It's amazing.
Indeed.
In that book, you describe an evolving landscape of 21st century learning technologies. Describe that landscape for us.
Now, that's a great framing question for our time together. And it actually was the driving question we wanted to answer when we designed the book and asked contributors to write chapters for it. Because what both Peter experienced and I experienced being on campus is how overwhelmed people felt by all the technology that they would read about, but would say, you know, it's a dizzying amount of developments that are taking place, and what should we know? How should we approach this? So what we tried to do in the first chapter was to develop a taxonomy of the major types of learning technologies that have existed and are now emerging to help people get their arms, at least for now, around what the capabilities are and that could enable them to make some initial decisions about what capabilities they would want to use and the courseware or other digital options that they will discuss, think about, and eventually select. And overall, I'd say that there are two major drivers of the evolving technology that I'll talk about. One is research on learning emerging from the learning sciences, which is a multidisciplinary field that studies the discrete steps learners take to perform tasks, solve problems, go through a process that can be broken down and addressed through the technology. And the second one that is the major driver of the evolution are applications of artificial intelligence algorithms. And artificial intelligence is often referred to as the defining technology of the 21st century. The capabilities then, these two drivers, really are responsible for developing interactive teaching and learning environments, which did not exist in the first generation of technology delivering learning, and also are now enabling us to learn much more longitudinally about our students' learning and the efficacy of our teaching practices. So we have the opportunity to be on the front line of students' learning in real time. And what's so amazing about that and important is that what we are capable of learning about student learning now and our teaching accords with recent research on learning from the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Mathematics in 2018, that describes learning as a dynamic, ongoing process. I love that term. So we're now actually able to become engaged in that living process in ways we couldn't quite do before. And that may become clearer as I go through the particular types.
So when you talk to people on campuses, you mentioned their responses to technology. Do you find that when they think about this digital landscape, that they are embracing it, excited by it, or frustrated by it?
I think there are a range of responses. Some are from people who say, I don't believe technology can do what I do. And I would say the environment is different, but after I discuss these changes, I think you're going to see the various ways in which you do interact, the way in which you can build a culture with your students, and what more you can learn from them. But there is also a level, I think, of almost fear or intimidation about using the technology. So when I ask people in this range of, do you know about these kinds of technologies to don't, you see a very broad range of people, from those who say, I could just barely present my course through the LMS, for example. I didn't turn on any of the things that you're talking about. I don't know about them. To some who say, I know they exist, but I never tried them.
Okay. Interesting.
I know we're going to dig a bit deeper into the different types of technologies and your work with that, but one kind of overarching question that we have for you is, in this changing landscape of education, where there's just so many questions and even turmoil, how does a college or university manage to stay current and relevant?
Okay. I would say, I'm going to mention several types of ways that you can remain and current, depending on sometimes how you learn or how you want to get access to things. But I would say, hands down, EDUCAUSE, the nonprofit association that focuses on educational technology overall, and then included in that learning technology, is the go-to place. Primarily because they are constantly focused on writing about in EDUCAUSE review and in an annual report, the Horizon Report, which coincidentally in 2021 focuses on technology for teaching and learning, just so people know that. That's something to read now. And it discusses technology and related issues such as algorithmic bias, for example, might be one, student privacy issues related to that. But it's also an organization that offers a range of opportunities for people to remain current and relevant. So from the publication, from a very specific group called the Education Learning Initiative that writes a column entitled Things You Should Know About X. And the X would be, supposing I want to know about learning analytics, which we'll talk about, or I want to know about robots. They're on the ball and the most current about what's going on. In addition, they offer online seminars, conferences, highly accessible organization, and just the super best place to remain current. And in the book, there's a chapter that describes a MOOC, which was developed through the SUNY system, that would provide people an opportunity to actually design a technology-enriched course. And in the process of that, you know, learn about and experiment with learning technologies. As part of that, there is a wiki that is a socially curated resource of emerging current and emerging technologies that people have evaluated. And if you're a kind of person who likes to be hands-on right away, that's certainly an option. And I know that ACUE, the Association of College and University Educators, has a certificate program called Effective Online Teaching Practices. Now, once you have a sense of what the capabilities are, and you're trying to narrow down courseware or other digital options, one of the places I would encourage people to explore is what's called Courseware in Context, which is an online resource for administrators who have to make certain decisions about the technology, cost, can we run this, will we be able to sustain it, instructional designers, a section for them, and as section for faculty to help them learn more about the research that underlines the development of a product and the capabilities of it, whether it allows you to add your own material or adjust material, whether it provides evidence of student data. It's just an excellent source to help you narrow things down. So I would encourage people to think about that. And I have very high regard for instructional designers, LMS administrators, and ed tech experts on campus who are probably just exhausted from their work in the pandemic. So I almost hesitate to say it, but I really do want to laud them because they are generally, and professional developers as well, on the cusp of what's going on. And in many of the workshops that I will do, I will have them join in with me and actually present with me so that they can say within the context of the institution, gee, this is how this works, and or they follow the workshop with a specific hands-on one. And I think this is very much peer-driven. You know, the outsider can open the door, but people only step in when they see that they can do it or their peers have done it. And I find that to be an effective way to sort of stay on top of things.
As we're speaking, and I'm going to say something that this is nothing new, that might not make much sense. But I was thinking about a faculty member, let's say, for example, in the humanities, who might spend a lot of time reading books and articles in their discipline. And they're picking up new ideas all the time. How different that is from trying to learn a new technology.
Yeah.
I guess I never thought about it that much before. My typical response to faculty would be, get busy and learn this. But it's just not that simple.
Yeah, that's right. It's a different world than most of us learned in and have taught in. So it's difficult to set to. You know, the first response is, can I just do what I did in the classroom? And the answer is, no, you really can't, because of issues such as, although this is an issue in classrooms, of attention span, access to material, diverse resources, knowing about them, and being nimble in your use of the capabilities of the technology. But it is a new frontier for many people, so they need to feel that they can learn it with the guidance from those excellent people I define and through other peers.
It's probably also reassuring for faculty to learn that they can still connect with students, for example, through Zoom or through email or through a whole variety of communication tools to still communicate information to their students, to still build those relationships.
Sure. I mean, that was the major criticism directed against, you know, the first signs of online courses way back when.
Yep.
That there were no opportunity for that, but there are just multiple opportunities now. So chat rooms, video conferencing, in-text responses to students in their work, group projects, being able to see students online, absolutely.
Excellent.
You've been a wealth of resources already, which I'm excited to link to and provide more on that for our listeners on the website, digitaltolearn.com. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, happy to.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.